Bingo.
Always glad when it works. Good to be back with you folks tonight. And as I mentioned this morning, we're going to focus most of the time on missions, one form or another. And one of the real privileges we have is that we are able to be involved in all kinds of missions, cross-cultural missions, and not just overseas, other continents and countries, but a growth area of ministry is cross-cultural mission in Canada. And so we're going to mention some of these things as we go along. That was 30, over 30, now almost 40 years ago now. And you're a good man, Gunga Din. And I was mentioning this morning that so far as we can know something, we knew that God wanted us to leave Winnipeg. And being involved in a business with my three brothers, and take a year off and go to Ireland. And a part of the model that we subscribe to, that we see in the Word of God, that MSC upholds, is church, local church-driven missions. And so much as possible, we like to see local church raise up, train, pray with, and commend and send and support their workers so that the workers are there. And as I mentioned this morning, Grace Chapel in Winnipeg took that step of faith with us, which included Babu Uman. And while we thought it was only for a year, we're coming up on 40 years, and we're still doing that. That was, I believe, so actually when that photograph was taken, I wouldn't have thought of this, except Dave mentioned something. That was like our first morning after we showed up in Dublin with our two little girls. And pretty much, I would say, the first people that we met, or the first person that we met, was a woman named Mary Lynn Farwell, who is Annie's grandmother. And they became very... We must have looked like we didn't know what we were doing. But they took us under their wing, Mary Lynn and her husband, Russ. They had not arrived not too long before that. They were there for 6 months, and that was a very soft place to land because they were there. And they came back two or three more times over the years for those kind of periods of time. And so we got to know them very well, not just in Ireland, but down in Lawrence, Kansas, where they lived. Our son was born in Ireland back in 1985. Actually, I don't want to slip up. And when did Sudbury Bible Fellowship begin? Because I remember in November of 1986, traveling through here and staying with a couple named the Bibbies, Robert Bibby. And I met the Andersons at that time as well. Was the building already here? Yes, it was? Okay, so that was my first visit to Sudbury Bible Fellowship in November 1986, however long ago that was. In any case, and we've appreciated the fact we've been here many times over the year. And we've appreciated that this, as I travel and take meetings in a lot of places, over a lot of years. Again, this has always been a soft place to land. And we appreciate that very much. All these years later, although we live in Winnipeg, we spend a lot of time overseas. And a lot of our time nowadays is involved with the Ministry of MSC Canada. We head up a ministry called E-Teams, that short-term evangelism teams, that work cross-culturally. We try and teach people how to do evangelism by doing it. And so we only go to populations where they actually speak English so that we don't need to do, pantomime gospel and drama gospel and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We can just share the gospel with the language that we have. I'm a regional rep for MSC across the northwestern Ontario in the prairies. And we're also heading up a new ministry called Indigenous Peoples of Canada, which I'm going to talk a little bit about tonight. Along with that, Robin and I are involved in something called Worker Care, something that's been developed over the last 8 or 10 years. And we have three couples and two singles, a brother and a sister, who are involved in this Worker Care. And basically, we have divided up the world. It sounds sinister, but we've divided up the world, and we're all looking after missionaries commended from Canadian assemblies who are working in other countries. And for Robin and I, we got the hardest job. We have to do Europe and Eastern Europe. Very difficult Europe. Compared, you know, some of them get the ease of going to obscure African and South American countries. We get to go to Europe. Anyways, must have done something right at some point. And so those are things that we're involved in. Again, MSC Canada, which Sudbury Bible Fellowship have been involved with, partnered with for many years. Our two tracks that we run on are, one, local church-driven missions. We don't look to second workers from churches like this, and they become our workers, and we train them, and we send them, and we, all those kind of things. We see the role from the scripture is the role of the local church, so that they always remain your missionaries. MSC comes alongside with all kinds of support and services to supplement what the local church can do, and to help support them and that missionary. Again, the length of services that MSC is offering, mostly driven by need, is expanding. And one main area of need is risk assessment, risk management. There's very few places that we are sending mission workers today where risk assessment isn't necessary. And while we don't talk about safety and security, there was no promise that we can see in the Bible of safety and security, and especially for those who are deciding to cross cultures and cross oceans. And so we don't promise that. We don't encourage people to think in those terms. But so far as it concerns them and us helping them, we want them to assess their situation, their circumstance. And so depending on where they are, we make visits and assess their risk. Maybe a lot of people in a lot of places have one door that exits their house, and they have bars on all the other windows and everything else because of the country that they live in and the threat. And there's all kinds of things that we survey, the walls around the buildings. Some of them have 12-foot walls and 6-foot gates. It kind of defeats the purpose of the 12-foot wall. But our folks are under risk today. We at MSC engage a leading international company called Garda World, and they have the actual locations of all our mission workers wherever they are in the world. And every morning we get a printout from Garda World. They have about 200 agents that work and live around the world that report back to them. And so we become aware almost immediately of anything that's going on that could be a threat to any of our workers, no matter where they are. And every morning we get a printout of anything that has happened so that we can then be in touch with our workers wherever they are. And very often we're aware of things they didn't realize had taken place overnight just around the corner from their house. We have contingency plans to repatriate missionaries very quickly. Again, if a family has to get out of a country, they need a plan. Even people with plans, when something happens, they have a hard time remembering the plan. Eventually, they get around to grabbing their go bag or whatever it is, and they start to work their plan. In the past, a lot of people have not had a plan. They start to think about it when the threat arrives. And that threat could be something to do with weather, not just political and other kinds of things. And so that's a big area of service that is growing. Phil Barnes, who's known up in this area of the province, he's been our executive director for the past 12, 15 years. He has stepped out of that. He's retired from the executive director role. And Randy Hoffman from Heidelberg is our new executive director. But Phil has taken on this area of being risk manager. And so he's making those contacts regularly. And not just our folks overseas. Some of our folks that are living in First Nations communities and things like that here at home in Canada. So that's sort of the risk management. And it goes up to and including dealing with mission workers who have been kidnapped. And we've had some of our mission workers who have been kidnapped. And we don't talk about who that was or when it was, but it happens. And we don't deal with it. We pass that over immediately to this company called Garda World. They are negotiating with kidnappers for multinational companies and nonprofits all around the world. And but again, MSC. So there's a case where a local church, how does a local church cover kidnapping of their worker? That's why MSC is here. We do those things. And we usually have the wherewithal that we can spend whatever we need to spend in order to get them to safety and things like that. So just that's something that people don't necessarily think about. There's a lot of information on the MSC website, and it's being revamped. Our organization is going under a lot of change. Another area is we've rethought through our missions program. Used to be we serviced missionaries abroad. Overseas workers is what they were called. And then there was home workers. And we had about 250 overseas and about 400 here at home. The folks that were here at home in full-time ministry, they could register, their assembly could send their commendation letter to MSC, and we would set up an account for them. And largely, we would only receive funds for them, write their donors' receipts, and then send on 100% of the funds to them. It's a feature of MSC in missions. It's a unique thing that 100% of all the funds that are sent to MSC for mission workers or mission projects or whatever it is, 100% goes. We believe that we are asking the other rail that we run on, along with local church-driven missions, is committed to God's supply. There's very few things that we tell the workers that we're servicing to do and not to do. Increasingly, it has to do with CRA, they don't understand MSC not having mission workers, but sending millions and millions of dollars overseas, and they don't like it. They don't like it. They want these people to be our employees so that we can deduct income tax, so that we have to make payments to EI and CPP and all that. And so we're a bit of an anathema to CRA, but we are asking our workers. Just for an increasing amount of compliance so that we stay in good standing with the powers that be. We've reorganized. We no longer see them overseas and at home. Nowadays, we talk in terms of global mission workers. And that's anybody who's working cross-culturally, primarily focused on evangelism, discipling, and church planting, whether they're somewhere else in the world or whether they're in Canada. And increasingly, a trend in mission is the world is coming to Canada. And amongst those that are 40 and under, they have a greater vision for the people that are here. And they're not instinctively, they're not thinking so much about traveling halfway across the world and living in very extreme circumstances, say to witness to Muslim people. There's all kinds of Muslim people here in Canada, and a lot of them are in specific areas, like in Toronto. And they can move right in there and be cross-cultural mission workers. Same with, we have, it's a trend in missions, again, especially amongst those that are under 40, to be looking to minister in Northern Canada amongst First Nations communities. And without a doubt, there's very few cross-cultural circumstances into which we send mission workers that are more difficult, even more cross-cultural than our first working with our First Nations people and the Inuit up in the Arctic Circle. And so that's a change that we are now looking at providing all our services to global mission workers, whether they're somewhere else in the world or here at home in Canada. And so that's a change. We are also, along with developing this Indigenous Peoples of Canada ministry, we are going to be raising the profile of our workers in Quebec. Again, getting them on board as cross-cultural workers. And also amongst newcomers ministries. That is a huge one. All kinds of refugees are coming to Canada and just newcomers that are immigrating. We have a tremendous ministry in Winnipeg called Naomi House, and they provide housing for newly arrived immigrants and refugees for up to 1 year and help them with everything, get them settled, get them jobs, get them sorted with the government, all that kind of stuff. I can't report on all the stuff that's going on, but that's what's happening. And a trend is more and more of our younger people under 40 that are looking to engage in cross-cultural missions are looking to serve, whether it's in Quebec, whether it's with newcomers, or whether it's Indigenous Peoples of Canada right here in Winnipeg. We have a brother now, Doug Anderson. He's an elder from Arendale Bible Chapel. He's got a lifetime, 40 years of experience in missions. And he's the fella on the left-hand end, the hippie. You can tell he grew up in the 60s. He's never got over it. In any case, Doug has lived in Africa, the Middle East, Asia. And so he's taken on this because we have so many projects. MSC no longer funds bricks and mortar projects. It's a decision we made a few years ago, actually during COVID time. When people send us money to use where needed most, we want it to go into ministry and outreach and other kinds of things, things that directly involve people. Having said that, we are setting up our workers with a project accounts. And so if they want to see a new assembly building built somewhere or a medical clinic built somewhere else, we will set them up and we will receive funds for them. Again, we'll receipt their donors and forward the funds 100% to them. And because it's increasing so much and the projects, some of the projects have gotten so big, Doug Anderson has been taken on and he is serving with us 3 days a week and overseeing that and making trips. And seeing, again, technically, we'd have to argue it in court with CRA, whether there are projects or not, or we're just sending funds. They don't like us just sending funds. they want us to be in charge of projects. We don't see philosophically that we're in charge of these projects. The workers are, and the workers are the missionaries of the churches that sent them. They don't get all that, the nuance. And so we are working to stay on the right side of all these issues, and Doug is a big help with that. Just this past month, you mentioned Levi. Someone said he was here recently, several weeks ago. And so he was in Antakya in Turkey, right down beside the Syrian border. And there's all kinds of refugee camps there. Unfortunately, half of them are gone. The people are gone because of the earthquake that took place a couple of months ago, 3 months ago maybe. And so we have a worker from Canada, Rick, in Tulin, Monroe, and they've been in the Middle East for, again, 30 plus years. And they were working in Antakya. That's why I work in English. In any case, whatever it is, it's the Antioch of the Bible. It's the Antioch of the Bible, where they first sent out Barnabas and Saul to do mission work. And so they had been there decades. And that's a picture of Rick just about 6 weeks ago, standing where his house used to be. And it was completely completely broken down and hauled away. And that is the assembly building in Antakya. And it remains standing, but has since been bulldozed because it was condemned. I think there was 50 or 60,000 people that died in that earthquake, and they were at the epicenter, that particular town. Now, here's something interesting. About 5 years ago, they started a project that people have been funding through MSC Canada, and it was for not just a church building, but for really a center for Christian work. And so there's the building. This was taken after the earthquake. It was the only church building in that city that remains standing. And the assembly premises where they're going to meet is the second to the top floor. There's all kinds of other ministry that are going to run out of that place, but it's standing. You can see they completed the roof within the last month or so. And so it's going to be occupied, and by a lot more people. A lot of people are going to be using this because there's almost all the, pardon me, all the other church buildings have been flattened. And the Christians there in the assembly, again, the assembly building, I showed you that, was up at the end of a lane and kind of discreet. And a lot of people didn't know it was there. Since the earthquake, this is the stuff, you know, as with the story of Joseph, his brothers intended something for evil. God intended it for good. That's what's happening all over the world. As you can, as sure as you can count on earthquakes or hurricanes or whatever is happening, wars that are causing disruption and death, in the midst of that darkness that gets darker, the light shines brighter all the time. God wins. God absolutely wins. It's true in Ukraine. The number of people getting saved in Ukraine and all these situations, God wins. God wins. And the assembly is no more, isn't discreet any longer. Everybody knows about them because they mobilized, and we had containers shipped with tarps and all kinds of cooking equipment, all kinds of things. And they have set up a soup kitchen that is serving hundreds of people every day. They set up a daycare. They set up kids clubs. Kids aren't going to school. And all those things are happening. This was a meeting. Rick Monroe at the front that Doug Anderson was at an assembly meeting. And he said there was over 100 people there. There's only 20 people in the assembly. But people are coming. Muslims are coming just because of the goodness of what's being done in their midst. No strings attached, no agenda, nothing else. They want to hear what's going on, what's with these folks. So that's happening right now. And so pray about that, support that work. And almost 2 years ago, on February 24th in 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine. We're all aware of that. That day, we had had a Zoom call with all our mission workers in Europe and Eastern Europe just about 2 weeks before this to try and get a read on what they were thinking, how they were feeling. Were they making plans if this went through? And so immediately on the day that the war was declared, MSC opened this fund, the Ukraine Relief Fund, and people started to supply funds so that they could be sent to help refugees. And it was a tremendous response. It's been overtaken by other events, even though the need in Ukraine becomes more critical all the time. The longer people are without homes and everything else. And so, within a few weeks of, within a couple of weeks of the war starting, MSC asked me, because I was familiar with Europe and Eastern Europe, if I would go and survey as many of our workers, see how they were doing. We weren't going to check on how they were spending the money, even to offer an opinion of what they should do. That's not our role at MSC. We wanted to see how they were doing. I can tell you, and I ended up meeting 38 mission workers and mission organizations, and whether they're Canadian, American, Australian, New Zealand, UK, whatever they were, we were stopping and visiting them to just touch base. I can tell you that all of them were overwhelmed. Just a month later, they were overwhelmed with the amount of work. And if you're a Christian full-time worker serving, you don't say no to people in the circumstances that were surrounding them. A lot of them have recovered somewhat from that, and they've gotten systems in place and stuff like that. A lot of the Ukrainians have gone back to Ukraine. Within the 6 weeks I was there, from the beginning, by the sixth week at the end of April in 2022, that week they reported there were more Ukrainians going back into Ukraine than there were leaving Ukraine that quickly. And I think we all got the impression that the Ukrainians weren't happy about the Russians coming into their country, and they decided to push back, and they did. And what with that pushing back, when I was there, again, at the beginning, our humanitarian aid organizations that we support, fund, our mission workers who head them up, they could only take trucks of relief supplies and that as far as the Ukraine border. Then they bought warehouses, and they would empty it. The reason they couldn't go any further is because the insurance companies wouldn't let the trucks go into Ukraine. Very practical matter. Not that there weren't all kinds of drivers willing to risk whatever they had to risk in order to take things all the way to Eastern Ukraine if they needed to, but the insurance companies wouldn't let them. And so that's the way it was being handled. And so all kinds of people were coming to these warehouses, loading up with vehicles and vans and going back. That's the way that it was at that time. I think I drove around 7,000 kilometers hooking up with people in all kinds of places. There's so many stories from that. I can't go back that far, except to say again, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how helpless and hopeless people feel in those circumstances, the Lord is there. The Lord is there. And they just need to be encouraged and reminded. I had some of our mission workers, all I did was ask them, how are they doing over a meal? Take them out for a meal, ask them how they're doing. And they'd become completely overwhelmed. They couldn't answer. And again, God is full of grace. There's a lot of them that are, they were dealing with traumatized people. Absolutely traumatized people. I've shown a slide of a little guy. I was speaking at a church in Poland, and I showed a picture of my grandson, who was 5 at that time, with a Ukrainian soccer scarf around his neck and holding his finger up, #1. And I used that as I traveled, just to make connection. In any case, after the meeting was over, this young couple approached me with someone to interpret with them. They were Ukrainians, but they spoke Russian, but their house had been bombed. They were in Poland. They were hoping to get to Canada, to Calgary. She had some relatives. And so, but her relatives already had a full house. They couldn't accept them. So we offered to, we know people in Calgary. We know people in Sudbury. And Christians do very well at all this kind of stuff because they actually care and they have faith. They can see beyond the present circumstance to see how this is going to be used in big ways. So if I had phoned up people in Sudbury and said, this family are coming to Sudbury, and they have some family there that can sort of help them negotiate, but they just need a place to stay and a place, people to help them get settled, you guys would have risen to that occasion. So that was happening, and then I noticed they had a little boy standing there beside them. I should have just thrown the slide in. It would have been more interesting. The point is, this little guy was standing there dumb. And finally, after I finished chatting with his parents, I just bent down and said, how old are you? And it was translated. And he held up his hand like that. And so I asked him if he had seen the slide of my grandson on the screen. And he nodded. And we talked very little. And I said, could I take your photograph and send it to my grandson in Winnipeg? And he didn't really respond too much. His parents then said that would be okay. And so I got down with my phone and was going to take a picture. And I was so stupid because I'm waiting for the little guy to smile for the camera. And then I knew his parents were putting him under pressure. They were telling him to smile. And after about 10 seconds, it hit me. This little kid can't smile. He's lost his home. And they're all like that. They're traumatized. And our workers who are dealing with them at that time, we're all evidencing secondhand trauma in dealing with an onslaught of these folks with these kind of needs. In any case, I got to keep moving. This past, we went back on a worker care trip to Eastern Europe this past January to March, and visited with workers in a lot of these countries. We don't make an absolute promise, but we say to Canadians commended from assemblies that we will try to visit them where they are once every 5 years. And so we have kept to that. These were the last on our five-year cycle in January to February. And we got to see missionaries in all those places. The wards that are in Entrepierre in France, it's a restored village up in the foothills of the Alps. And they run a respite place. This village is full of quarters where French workers, French-speaking people, can come and just take a week of R&R, 2 weeks of R&R. If they want professional help while they're there, both Jonathan and Rachel Ward, they're commended from Malton Bible Chapel, just west of Toronto. They and their staff are there to meet that need. And we, while we were there, that's their staff down in the corner. They had another couple come in September. And so we, one thing we do is we cook. And so we put on a meal for them and their staff. This is down in Manosque in France. The Dixons have been in France for 40 years, coming up on 40 years. This is their last church plant in Manosque. It's the largest nuclear research station anywhere in the world. And they are dealing with expats. And so that's Brad and Catherine. They do French lessons as a way of contacting people who are not living in their countries. A lot of Muslims, Russians, Japanese people, Chinese people, really is diverse. So they have different levels of French that they're doing. Catherine, I think Robin sat in on her sessions. She's more the elementary people that are just getting going. And Brad with some of those that all very highly educated people. Most of them, though, are not working. Their husbands are working at the nuclear facility. And so that's the Dixons. While we were there, they put on a, it was actually February 14th, and they put on a Valentine's banquet for all these folks who are working in their area. And so we did the banquet for them, a four-course meal for 40 people while we were there. This is in south of Rome, in Salerno in Italy. And a couple, again, commended from the from BC. Joe and Loredana in the, whatever color that is, dark pink. That's Joe and Loredana Antignani. And he's the son of Italian immigrants. She is Italian. They met at a Bible college there in Italy, and they are serving the Lord full time. And again, we got to spend 3 or 4 days with them. Great couple, just working away with the assembly there and in evangelism. And I mentioned this morning I had the opportunity to speak in that church in Salerno with Joe translating for me. I got to talk to the folks about my great uncles who were both wounded in Italy during the Second World War, and to tell their stories and then to tell the story of the Lord Jesus Christ. It was amazing. We had a lot of other visits. Our furthest away visit was in Georgia, on the east shores of the Black Sea. So if you think of Ukraine, it's on the west shores of the Black Sea. Across the Black Sea to the east is Georgia, along with Armenia and Azerbaijan, and the Azerbaijanis and the Georgians and the Armenians don't get on together. It's like most countries in this area of the world. But they are a young couple. They served the first 7 years of their missionary service. They are commended by Arendale Bible Chapel in Toronto. And Mark and Miriam Carlson. And again, they're very discreet. Wherever they worked the first 7 years of their missionary service in northwestern China, in the area where the Uyghurs are. And they were actually working amongst the Uyghurs. And when COVID took place, they're a part of a team. A team of people that have come together working with different organizations, but working together. They were together in northwest China. When COVID came, they had to get out of China. And they were stuck back here at home in Canada, United States. And they kept on communicating. And they together believed that God was calling them to go to Georgia and to learn a completely different language and to reach out with the love of Christ. And so that's what they're doing. They had the little boy in China. They now have a little girl that just arrived before we got there. And they're working in that time it was Tbilisi, but now they've moved to a remote rural area that is only Muslim. And they have a desire to establish like a B&B that people can come to and to give them legitimacy in that community, in that area, but also to use it as ministry. So, and that's the Gospel of John in whatever their writing is. I'm the wrong guy to be going to different, anyways, doesn't matter. I like my way of doing it better than, you know, it not being done. That's about all I can say. These are places where we're heading this January in a couple of months. And again, there's some of those places that we're going to all the time. Slovakia and Moldova in particular because of the ongoing need in Ukraine and our involvement there. This is Moldova. It's landlocked on three sides, bordered by Ukraine, north, east, and the south. On the western border is Romania, which is a part of the European Union, which is helpful to them. That purple area, strip of land, is still occupied by the Russians. It's an autonomous zone, it's called. Down in the, it's a very poor country, underdeveloped, no political power. And so they have a large Turkish population in the south. And you can see regions there where the Turkish people just say, no, we're in Moldova, but this is our territory. And so they negotiate that. It's the same with the Russians. The Russians kept a strip of land, which was mainly an ammo dump, and barracks for soldiers. There's 1,500 Russian soldiers who are landlocked, who are locked in there. They can't get out. They can't leave through Moldova, and they definitely can't leave through Ukraine. And Russian planes can't fly in or out of there. So that place always exists. So there was a brother I met, Abel, from Romania. He would have been interested in all that. We've been working, we've been increasingly involved with an organization called CMI Aid in Zernesht. So that's down in the south. You can see it. And the city next to there is Kahul. And so that's where we go back and forth. Kishinev, which is up with the other star, is the capital of Moldova. It's about a 3-hour drive, about 120 kilometers. It's not a very big country. So that's CMI Aid. The love of Christ compels us. They are doing a wonderful work started by the couple up in the top right corner. He's Australian. She's Armenian. And they met in Armenia doing missions. And they're settled there. They've got a really good assembly going there. They built They built the building that was just being finished. It wasn't finished when I was there the first time. And they built into that a new commercial kitchen And one of the reasons we went back is we took a team that included a brother from Dublin that is a professional chef. And he spent a month there. We spent about 10 days with him just so that we could. They had all this space and all this new equipment. They had no idea how to set it up and or how to operate, like cook and hold units and steam kettles and all that kind of stuff. And so we did that. That was what our team did. In that same building, they host the assembly, and they have tremendous amount of meetings on Sundays, kids, teens, all kinds of people coming. So they do whatever they need to, whatever they think is going to meet a need that people actually have, they do it. They don't pray about it. They do pray about it, but not in the way that sometimes we, well, I'll pray about that, which means nothing's going to happen. They just assume that God wants them to minister Christ to people in meeting whatever needs they have. And if God doesn't want something to happen, it won't happen. So they presume there's always green lights. It's all green lights all the way, unless they get a red light. And that's called faith. That's called faith. It's not their will being done in heaven. They are doing what they believe God has mandated them to do as believers. About half the staff, 50 staff, are Moldovan people. And they're doing what they believe God wants them to do as believers. One of the things they do is a soup kitchen. Every day, this kitchen, this new commercial kitchen, is now being used every day to create 50 to 60 meals of shut-ins. This lady was an English teacher in Kahul. We went to visit her. You can see the Coke bottle on the windowsill. It's not Coke. She's got severe rheumatoid arthritis. She's got no family, no friends, no one to look after her. So CMI staff show up every morning, and empty her bottles and help her get comfortable and provide her with a hot meal. And then they do the other half of the list in the afternoon. The people that we've taken on teams there all get to do a ride-along. They're all shaken. They're all shaken by the circumstance of people there in Moldova. That guy's name was Hunter. And we had a great chat with him because he was a hunter. I'm a hunter. And he talked about his grandfather teaching him to hunt. That's who taught me to hunt, and I'm teaching my grandsons to hunt. And so we had a great time. He's in hospital. He might have actually passed away by now. They also run camps all summer long, 8 camps, 200 a week. They're day camps. And so they have buses like that one, and they go around to all the villages, the towns. They collect kids, and they bring them, and it's a 5-day camp. And again, they have the site, the camp facility is right there. There's the kitchen, some of the kitchen, the ladies working there. And so that's goes on all the time. We are going to be running camps there, which are English immersion camps. So we're going to take English, native English speaking people, creating a completely English environment, and as a means of getting 16 to 24-year-olds not only becoming more proficient in English, but it's going to be like a camp here, like at Northland, with a message in the evening and everything else, but it's all in English, although we're not sure about the message yet. They need to understand what they're hearing when it comes to that. But so we had a crew ready to go this past May, and 3 weeks before we were supposed to leave, Air Moldova, the national airline, suspended operations because of corruption in the organization. The government shut them down, and so we lost our way of getting in and out. And Jewel Hobbs was on that team. She was on that team, and I think Pam Gonder was almost convinced to be on that team. So now with this extra time before we take the team back this May, you know, I'm just saying, no pressure. But you can pray for Pam that she would follow the leading of the Lord. In any case, Mr. Sarlo, we've talked about this too. In any case, they have another facility called Central Bethesda. That's an apartment block during the Soviet era. And when the Soviets pulled out, people just stripped everything in it, electrical, plumbing, all that kind of stuff. CMIA bought that about 12 years ago, and they are still renovating, but it's almost completely done. And it is a center of ministry. So you come in, and you can see all the flags there. They have a Christian daycare going there. They have a Christian school going on there. You can see down on the right hand, they have two rooms that are set up as computer labs for use by teachers in the public school system. The public school system doesn't provide any kind of things like that. They have no money. And so the teachers book time online to come. They get in 2-hour blocks. They can come to the computer lab at Bethesda Central, and they can then print off all their course material. There's another room that's set up with copiers and printers, and they give them a budget. Every teacher gets a budget of 200 sheets of free paper every week that they can use. Can you imagine the goodwill? It is amazing. Amazing. They have a coffee shop there called Cafe Sydney. And one of the workers, that's Alan. He's a barista there making coffees for people that are coming in. This is something else they do. They have something called the Living Museum. Over 10,000 public school students come to this museum every year. And this one, which we attended, that's our team there in the bottom left, watching the presentation. It was the life of George Mueller, a life of faith. And it was an apartment building. So they just have rooms. And so every room is decorated, is set designed to back a different story from the life of George Mueller. And so you can see that people that might know the story when he had no food for the orphans. And so down the bottom left, that's a local farmer who wasn't going to make it to market with his milk. So he, as they were praying, he knocked the door and brought in canisters of milk. And so where we're sitting is where the students would sit when they come for the visit. And so they become a part of the play. And these are CMIA workers that get dressed up, learn scripts, and all those kind of things. And so there's a, when at that one, the gospel is being shared with a farm worker that gets saved. Anyways, you get the idea. Up at the top, that is a square room about 12 feet by 12 feet. And they've painted it in such a way that you lose the sense that you're even in a square room. And it, the story there is when Mueller was coming back from America, his trip to America. And again, he witnessed to the, I think, the captain that was on board who got saved. So isn't that it? And the public school system. Bring 10,000 children to these presentations. There's children there that have gone through. You can see some of the characters there still dressed up. And whatever CMIA does, they do, it's top notch. Not for an underdeveloped country. For a Western, first world country, it's top notch. And so they are always giving people things that are going to help them. And in those bags, of course, there's gospel materials and a Bible and all that kind of stuff in their language. But there's they're like glossy shopping bags. And they put things in like toothpaste and toothbrush and shampoo and soap and all kinds of stuff that people there, it helps them. We would be offended if someone presumed to give us that kind of stuff. They're not offended. It's huge. And they put toys in there and all that kind of stuff. All those 10,000 children that went through and got that gospel presentation also leave with those kind of things. They're still doing a lot of taking aid into Ukraine. They have a warehouse in Odessa. And so whatever we are sending them to be used for Ukraine relief is still going to Ukraine. They have a large warehouse where all that stuff gets sorted. But they do a lot of that distribution across Moldova as well. Those are red boxes. Those are mailboxes that are actually put in the public schools. And if you're familiar with Postal Bible School, which is in over 100 countries around the world, top-notch correspondence, Bible correspondence courses. And so what they've been doing is they give these to the students, and the students don't have to mail them back because of the money in the postal system. They have these red post boxes in the schools, and the children just put them in there. They get corrected, and then they get brought back, and they get their new course and all that kind of stuff. This is going on starting next week. They do a Christmas festival in the front of Bethesda Central. And so, like across Europe, Christmas is a big deal. And so they set up, it's just lit up like a Christmas tree. And along with rides and booths where, you know, people are serving hot chocolate and popcorn and this... The story, the true story of Christmas is told in four different locations. And all the children get a special gift when they leave. They're given a passport at the beginning, not the parents, the children. And we're talking 12,000-15,000 between the end of November and the 23rd of December. It's just packed every day, every evening. They need people to help to serve chocolate. Things like that. But they give a passport, and each child has to get four stamps on their passports showing that they stopped by the booth where this part of the Christmas story was dramatized, where it was told to them. And then at the end, they can bring it back, and they get a special gift. Isn't that... It's... pretty good. So that was the team we had in there in March. We put on Irish banquets. We did three Irish banquets. And for International Ladies Day, they had 120 ladies come. The Department of Education sent all their staff. And again, our folks, we did the cooking along with all the other stuff. This guy here in the blue that's speaking, he's called the president of the region. It's like a premier of the province in Moldova where we are. And the guy beside him has become a huge fan of CMIA. He's the minister of education. And he had a meeting. So they invited all their staff to come to CMIA, and we put on an Irish banquet for them. We put on Irish banquets here. And so we did that. Our food got cold because they started making speeches, the president, the minister of education, about CMI aid and how much help they were to them as communities, as people. And it was extraordinary. This is called a wide open door, by the way. There's doors that open and then there's doors that close. We lived in Ireland at a time when the door was open and all kinds of people got saved, churches started, but it lasted for maybe 15 years. I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm telling you. So that minister of education had a meeting, all his deputies, at CMI Aid, with the leadership at CMI Aid, and he requested, he said, they want CMI Aid to send teachers into the Moldovan public schools to teach the Bible. Because they see amongst their population, the young people are becoming more and more immoral. Eastern Orthodox Church isn't cutting it. And they have requested, officially requested, teachers to come into the schools to teach the Bible. That's called a wide open door. And we are working, MSC is working right now. They sent five staff to CEF in Europe to get training. Moldovan people. They already speak the language. They have their own houses. We don't need to send people to Moldova. They can do it. And we're going to take a step of faith with CMI Aid to fund those teachers to spend their teach to go to schools and just take classes, take Bible classes. These are bags. Again, everybody that comes, these are school teachers, high school teachers. Bibles. That day the teachers were there, over 60 Bibles were taken, mainly Romanian, some that were Russian, all kinds of other tracts. But again, they get a gift bag full of all kinds of stuff, and we can't read the language. It's Russian, it's Romanian and Russian. It's John 3:16 printed on the bags. They started a volunteer fire department because all kinds of towns and villages, especially around them, had no coverage. Just the city had a government station. And so when the first time I was there, I know firefighters in Winnipeg, my son-in-law and other cousins. And I said, I'm going to bring these guys back. And because these guys don't know what they're doing. They bought that truck off eBay in the United Kingdom. They've bought at least 10 more since then. They're supplying them to the government stations. Because once fire equipment, even the trucks, are gone past their best before date, they can't be used in developed countries. But these guys, they're getting a truck like that that's, I don't know how much it would be worth, but they're getting it like for 5,000 euro. Probably it's 250,000 euro when it was brand new. And so that's what they're doing. And I couldn't get anybody to come with us this past March because I didn't know enough about what the need, how to explain the need to the guys that I know in Winnipeg. And so my grandson, that's Robin, our grandson in the middle there at the bottom, he had just completed firefighter college in Texas. And so I convinced him to come with us, because at least he understands. And so he did a complete audit of their whole system and everything else. And so we've come back. He's come back. And just a month ago, October 21st, we had a meeting with firefighters. And Owen did a presentation. And we've got a team of, we've got four or five captains, retired and active, that want to come. And other active and retired firefighters. And this is going to be huge. And so we're going to be training. Owen, while he was there, again, he didn't know anything except he had been through he had the theory. And so they had him do two afternoons of training. And he was so inexperienced, he had never fought a fire. He graduated before Christmas, came back, got a job. But they never got to go to a fire before he came to Moldova. So he fought his first, it was a field fire in Moldova. But we've got guys now that are very experienced that want to come. And the two government services that CMI Aid is providing, because they're buying PPE, they're buying foam, they're buying all kinds of stuff at reduced rates, having it shipped to Moldova, they're supplying government stations. And so we've got two cities that are going to receive training from the firefighter team that we're taking over. Now, here's the thing. When these guys fight a fire, you can figure out they got a an angle. They have a red pickup truck with a cab over. It's got no fire equipment in it. It's only got bags, gift bags full of stuff. Firefighting gospel calendars. Every firefighter in the whole of Moldova gets a gospel calendar along with a lot of other stuff. In the south of Moldova, CMI aides send people to deliver them personally, but they go right throughout. It's become so well known that the police chief in Cahul, the city, came to Matthew Hillier to say, why do the firefighters get this and not the police? So this, right now, this fall, right now, it's happening now. They're not only delivering all these goodie bags to firefighters, they're doing it to all the police in Moldova. The gospel. The gospel's going out. We've got it, like I said, we've got a team going in February, and we're trusting. And then we've got a team going, and I already mentioned that, for English immersion camps to Moldova. E-Teams is getting going again after COVID. We have a team being organized for Ghana. And again, Pam and Jewel, Jewel's been to Ghana, right? Some folks from here have been to Ghana. So Daniel Webster is hosting another team in June, July. We're working on a team to Ireland. And our English immersion camps are being run, the professional part of it, the English immersion part, English TESOL part of it, is Ray and Kelly Marshall, former missionaries to Ireland, Ecuador, and China. And they are involved in Kitchener. They're MSC workers. And so that's who's doing that. English immersion camps is going to be a growth ministry. All the young people in Europe, Eastern Europe, want to get into English immersion circumstances. They want to learn not from whether it's Slovakian teachers who were English majors or Moldovan teachers that were English majors teaching them English. They want to learn from native English people in an immersion environment. And so that's something that's going to be growing. I got to stop. That's Slovakia. They're doing a wonderful job. Let me just read that. This is last Sunday. He says, a few items. This is Alan Boussard. And so we met with him in March, Randy Hoffman and Sherry and Robin and I, with his staff. And on the eve of the anniversary of the breakout of the war, they have changed tact. They are no longer sending in humanitarian aid and supplies. They're doing other things altogether. And so he says there, we have launched on 25 October, phase two of the counseling program for traumatized children from the Chernihiv district. So if you remember when they used to be on the news, there's Kyiv and there's Kharkiv, and then there's a piece that goes up into Belarus. And so Chernihiv is right up in there, 5 kilometers from the border. And between now and the end of April, that's coming, around 600 children with at least one parent each will be able to pass through a two-week residential program. These are folks that are creative, they're visionary, they're passionate. And again, you can support them through MSC. He talks about other things. They're building houses. They're setting up people with businesses. This onion project, the farmers can't farm anymore. And so they can grow onions on their little patches of ground. So they're doing that. So that's it. Compassion fatigue is setting in. And we just need to pray, what would God have us do? And this is the ministry that we've just started, Indigenous Peoples of Canada. We had our first meeting back in our first conference a year ago. We had another retreat at Faith Bible Camp in Winnipeg this past September, a residential camp for workers, and just to give them respite and to minister to them, to build them up, to encourage them. It's a hard slog. And we had Stephen Vance from MSC, who is a registered psychotherapist in Toronto. He's an elder at one of the gospel halls down there. And he came and talked about trauma, abuse, attachment issues, things that are plaguing indigenous people. It's generational stuff. And then Howard Jolly, who's become a good friend, getting more involved with us, he did a day just on colonization, assimilation, and reconciliation. They also, MSC workers, along with Howard, have this band called Rising Above. Go to YouTube, listen to them. You won't be disappointed. You will not be disappointed. And they put on a concert during one of those nights. Howard, with help from, again, MSC, is now doing a podcast. YouTube, come sit with me, Howard Jolly. Check it out. If you have Aboriginal people that you know, this is a tremendous witness. This guy is from up by Moose Factory. He's a Cree, but he's lived in Winnipeg for 30 years. So,
the resources. Father,
seems like so much. But we know it's not even a drop in the bucket of what's actually taking place in this world tonight. Ways that your people, nationals, and mission workers are reaching out with the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. We can't imagine a work that big, but you are over it. You surround it. You infiltrate it. And you use it. And so, for the bit that we know, the work that goes on here in this city, in this province, in our country, and around the world, the bit that we know, find us faithful. And we just entrust ourselves to you and to that end. And all the things that we've heard, in Jesus' name, amen.